Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You're about to listen to Bananas for Bonanza, episode 15. This is Andy Daly. Hello. Here on this free feed, I'll be re-releasing all of the back episodes of Bananas for Bonanza, one every other week. If you want to hear new episodes ad-free, please subscribe to my Patreon at patreon.com/AndyDaly. The entire Bananas for Bonanza archive is also waiting for you there, and you can access lots and lots of bonus content. So do that. Okay. Thank you. Enjoy.
Yeah! Bonanza, it's the finest show alive. So consult your TV guide, get your great outdoors inside. Take some Ponderosa pride and forever may it ride. I'm Bananas for Bonanza.
Everybody's ready then. All right. Hey, Brian, I think I'm going to change it up this week. I'm going to start with a yeehaw. Good old-fashioned yeehaw this time. Here we go. Ready? Yeehaw! Yeah! Hey, Mutt Taylor, you done shot a bullet with somebody's name on it, if
that's what I do.
Holds.
Every episode, and this episode's bullet goes out to Phil Stewart in Lansing, England. Now, what I'm trying to do is shoot it in the trajectory that it could actually land at the feet of the person so they could have it as a nice souvenir.
Well, okay. Now, you know how a plane will travel. It'll take a sort of an arcing path up. It'll go further north than it needs to go to get to where it's going, right?
Right.
I don't know why they do that. Something to do with the roundness of the planet, I reckon. But so is that your plane with your bullet, too? Is it taking a sort of a...
I have to do that. I have to account for all the Earth's rotation and all that. And I do a lot of physics before we record. I sit down for what seems like a couple of hours, and
yeah.
I get on the phone with Michio Kaku, and he helps me get through it. Same with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Michio Kaku, him I don't know.
He's a scientist and physicist, you know. It's just this crowd I run in.
All right. Well, Phil Stewart, a lot of work has gone into that bullet that hopefully has landed safely at your feet over there in, say, Lansing, England?
Lansing, England. He's originally from Glasgow City in Scotland, and I believe he's a falconer.
Okay, sure. Well, what else are you going to do over there in Glasgow? I never heard of Lansing, England. All right, folks, welcome to Bananas for Bonanza. Hey, wait a minute. Let me say the thing I always say at the beginning of every one of these episodes. Hello, friend. Come on in. The gate is open wide. Yep. Oh, this is Bananas for Bonanza, and this show has nothing to do with goddamn bananas. The food, it doesn't have anything to do with that. Our guest booker keeps telling me about these banana farmers and produce managers who want to be on this show to discuss bananas. And it doesn't, goddammit, doesn't have anything to do with that. You fools obviously never listened to the show. This is about America's TV show, Bananza. Sorry, I get emotional when I think about Bananza. Today, we're going to be talking about Season 1, Episode 15. It's called The Last Hunt, and that's a silly name for this episode, really. But that's okay, because, man, this episode is just as funny as can be. We've got two of our heroes, Hoss and Joe, find themselves having to deal with woman business, and lots of it. And folks, we've got just the perfect guest to discuss woman business today, and couldn't be more excited to introduce her to her. But before we do that, let's talk to our regular co-host. I'm Dalton Wilcox, course poet laureate of the West, and you just heard from Mutt Taylor. Hello, Mutt.
Hey, how you doing? It's good to be here again.
Yep, Mutt Taylor is a guitarist for the Journeyman Country Western Music Outfit. And then we've got Amy Slaverson, Christian entrepreneur. Hello, Amy.
Hi, Dalton. I'm coming to you live from our closet beneath a quilt because my husband, he just doesn't like me podcasting as much. So I'm just trying not to bother him while he's watching shows and stuff.
Oh, no. You've been podcasting with us for a while now, but is it your husband just recently decided he's not wild about it anymore?
Well, I guess it's, you know, just the sound of my voice.
Oh, I see. Yeah, you guys have sort of an arrangement where you don't normally talk unless he pretty much says he wants you to. Is that about right?
Yeah, and we really support each other in that.
Wait, so if he don't like the sound of your voice, does that mean he doesn't listen? And if he doesn't listen, how's he getting any kind of content about Bonanza?
Well, I think
what Mud is asking is, your husband, does he listen to this podcast when it comes out to be publicly available? Is that what you're asking, Mud?
No.
Oh, no.
He says, you know, that's kind of your stuff. That's your thing. And then I take every interest in what he does. That's how we work it out.
That's a good little give and take. You guys have figured something out. He takes no interest in your things, and you take total interest in everything that he's into.
Yeah.
I watch everything
he suggests on YouTube, which is mostly baseball games being replayed from the 1950s to 70s.
Wow, that's fascinating. So he does all the taking, you do all the giving, but ultimately it's the same amount of giving and taking as a normal couple does, just usually they split it up. It's okay.
Yeah, that's right. It works.
That's a good way to think about it.
So much work, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
For at least one of us.
Yeah, you know, I live in an underground mine that I've been digging in a national park. And I live here with my new bride. She's I met her as a Russian sex person for money. But she seems to have a past life in the Russian military. And anyway, I'm trying to get her interested in Bonanza, and it hasn't been easy. But yeah, maybe that's something I just need to accept. Maybe she's not going to like my things, because I don't like her foods and crazy music she listens to, all that stuff. I don't want any of
that. She have breasts?
She does have breasts. Yep, she does. She does.
Sometimes that can be nice.
Well, yeah, I'm with you. All right, folks. Listen, we've been touching on some stuff about relationships here, and that's just the perfect transition to meet our fantastic guest, ladies and gentlemen. She is the best-smelling author and creator of the critically acclaimed audio series, The Complete Woman, as well as other books and audio series. Let's say hello to Maribel May. Hey.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I am just delighted to be here.
Well, we are so delighted to have you. Hello, Maribel. I just want to say, also use it. So the complete, why don't you go ahead and tell us what is The Complete Woman? Because you've got The Complete Joy and The Complete Wedding and The Complete Christmas, which is all books with accompanying audio series or something. Is that what it is?
That's absolutely right. And thank you so much, Dalton. Well, I will say that The Complete Woman is an audio series where I, Maribel May, empower women to make their husbands happy. So you can listen to The Complete Woman and the latest season, The Complete Christmas, wherever you get your podcasts.
Wow, this is fantastic. We really are all on the same page here in terms of how that works.
That's crazy, Maribel. That's what I do, too. I have a company called Lot's Daughters, and which is, it's a Christian-based multi-level marketing company. I'd love for you to be in my downline.
Oh, well, maybe there's a collaboration in our future. And I just have to say, I am personally podcasting from my walk-in pantry, which I have converted into a lady lair.
Wow. Well, how big is your walk-in pantry. And what you got? Because I feel like now that you say that, I can hear your voice pinging off of tin cans.
Yeah, thank you. It's about a 5x5 that I'm able to cram in a chaise.
Wow.
Excuse me. I've been snacking on the dry goods.
Unbelievable.
I bet your husband works, doesn't he?
Oh, Freck, yes. He's a paperwork attorney at Munchkins and Sons.
Say, what do they do over there at Munchkins and Sons?
Yeah, seems paperwork. Like pretty specific. Oh, okay.
Oh, paperwork. And he's a paperwork assistant, did you say?
Attorney.
Oh, a paperwork attorney.
He's so smart.
Yeah, that's real smart. Yeah, because I tell you, you don't want to have any illegal paperwork. Man, oh, man. Got to have a lawyer make sure it's all up and up on the law. Well, that sounds good. Now, let me ask you, Mayor Bell, you ever did watch any Bonanza before today?
You know, I have to say I have not. And, oh, boy, was I delighted.
Yeah, right? You like this show? What are your shows? What typically would you say is your all-time favorite? You got any all-time favorite shows?
As a busy working mother of two and devoted wife, I find it hard to take time away for me sometimes. So I don't get a lot of free time to sit in front of the boob tube and nosh on bonbons.
Right. Hear. I hear you. I feel like, Amy, you've expressed some things like that as well. You're so busy getting your husband's dinner ready and whatnot.
Especially around the holidays. I'm up to my neck in corncob dolls.
Oh. Hey, wait a minute.
I am too, but for a different reason. I said we just got so much in common here.
What's a corn cob doll? Is it what it sounds like?
It's when you take a corn cob and you put a face on it.
Uh-huh.
Now, wait a minute.
Yeah, this checks out. Some of my best friends are corn cob dolls.
This is a corn cob now. The corn's been eaten off of it, I reckon. So it's
just like
cob.
You would the skin of a normal doll.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Uh-huh. And then you put a face on the corn cob. How you getting that face on there? Are you gluing on buttons or are you?
Well, you can. It's really easy if you just use a Sharpie.
Uh-huh.
And you can make dresses of the silks. You can take this
corn
silk and make a dress.
Oh, my. Well, that's beautiful. That sounds lovely. Are they meant to be little Native Indigenous Americans peoples?
Oh, no, it's for my kids. It's just something fun for them to play with, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, because we're a little short on cash. I just tripled my inventory of Book of Revelations pillows, and I haven't been able to kind of move them. And it's going to be a little bit of a tight Christmas.
Oh.
Sounds like she's cracking. If I may.
Cracking, like cracking up? Yeah, well, that's just always the case because she's a hard working woman and a hashtag girl boss. Isn't that right, Amy? Yeah. Amy Sleverson, is the Christmas season very busy for your business? Are there particular products you're rolling out or is it all about just tripling the inventory on the existing products?
This entire episode is really a testament to the Lotz Daughters No Lines School of Acting. It's acting for women where it's a lot of listening and reacting off the lines of men. And you got to keep your face interested, but not so much so that it seems like, you know, you're taking over the scene.
Right. That is exactly right. That's a very good observation about this episode, which features an indigenous American savage or native person who's got never says a damn thing just about. And she's a woman.
Yeah, it seems like most of the ladies on this show could have come from that school of acting where they just stand by.
There's a lot of staying to
be. Well, that's the thing. We're being paid less, so we get to do less.
Here. It all works out.
It's so great. It's so wonderful.
Yeah, this episode is called The Last Hunt. You know how I like to do, I think maybe I'll do the fun facts about the cast and whatnot, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll go scene by scene. How's that sound as a plan?
Hoorah.
Ought to work just fine. Because now I'm really into this. I love to just say like, who was the guest stars and what else have they done? And so this episode has a character by the name of We Don't Know. At no time do we ever learn her name. She's just a Shoshone girl. And she was played by a woman named Shana Eden, who was an Israeli actress. And I don't know all kinds of, I don't know what an Israeli is, but I reckon it's basically the same thing as a Native American.
I could tell you it's a Jewish person typically, and it's really keeping to the theory that all the Native Americans are played by Jewish people in this show.
Oh, is that how it's been?
It seems. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although this is the first one with brown eyes I've seen, so I think they had to do that for this episode specifically to differentiate from the baby's blue eyes.
Well, and we'll get into that, but I don't really believe that baby had blue eyes.
I don't think so.
Once we get a look at him. But anyways, she was in a movie, and then a movie about an ornithologist going up against a family of bird poachers. With Peter Falk and Gypsy Rose Lee and Burl Ives as a character named Cottonmouth. And then, yep, it's called Wind Across the Everglades. And then she did this thing that happens a lot with the beautiful actresses of Bonanza when you look up their careers. She worked a lot for about 10 years and then vanished. So that happened to her. Then we got a character by the name of Sumner Kyle, and Richard Bailey drops in to do that. Richard Bailey played Milburn Drysdale on the Beverly Hillbillies for all them years. He was their banker and next door neighbor on the Beverly Hillbillies.
Oh shit.
Over there with Buddy Ebsen, who was in one of our other episodes. I love to look up the great credits. Okay, here we go. Raymond Bailey was in a movie called The Space Children. Here's the synopsis of that. A glowing brain-like creature, arrives on a beach near a rocket test site via a teleportation beam. The alien communicates telepathically with the children of scientists, and the kids start doing the alien's bidding as the adults try to find out what's happening to their unruly offspring. So in other words, these aliens trying to stop these rocket scientists from succeeding in launching a rocket make their children insufferable.
Wow. Now, Dalton, in all your monster hunting, you ever come across a brain-like creature?
I never have. And so I'm interested to see this movie to figure out what are the telltale signs of a brain-like creature.
Well you should meet my meatloaf.
Is your meatloaf brain-like?
According to my husband.
Oh. She said, damn it, this tastes like brains.
Maribel, you ever feel like your children have been taken over by a brain-like creature?
Yeah, I wanted to ask that of a parent. What could you imagine a child doing that would prevent a rocket scientist from loading a rocket off?
Well, honestly, it could only be an improvement from my lot. They're nightmares.
Yeah, kids are horrible.
Yeah, you got a couple of real lunatics running around there, have you?
Judy and Buzz.
Oh, Judy and Buzz. I like those.
Buzz is an outdoor child.
Full-time?
Basically.
Wow. That's
you
the
mean,
life.
Like the way you have an outdoor cat, you just kind of open
the
door.
We leave food out. We let him in for Christmas.
Oh, well, that's nice. Oh, good. Well, that's good for a boy. Get out. He was also in a movie called Tarantula, in which a spider escapes from an Arizona desert laboratory experimenting in giantism. Don't do that. Don't go experimenting in giantism.
What else was in that lab? So he's just the only one that escaped. But what if you took an elephant who's already a giant and experimented in giantism?
You might end up making him tiny. I don't know for sure.
Oh, I'd love to have a tiny elephant. Wouldn't
that be something? Teeny tiny elephant that could fit in your pocket?
Oh, God.
That'd be a whole different movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tiny elephant! Exclamation point. 1955. Yeah, I'd like to see that. But, no, I guess they was trying to, it was a well-meaning scientist trying to turn, like, one corn cob into 50. It was like a food supply thing.
Oh, I see. Trying to make a bunch of corn cob dolls.
Yeah, exactly. Then finally, I think, we got a fellow by the name of Steve Terrell. He played little Jason Kyle there at the end. And this actor, he was like, this is my big break. This actor really went for it. And he was in a movie called Invasion of the Saucer Man. And the plot of this one is a teenage couple driving with their headlights off to a makeout session on Lover's Lane accidentally runs over an alien creature with their car. The creature's hand falls off, then comes alive. It grows an eye and begins to stalk the teens. The teens eventually discover that bright light can destroy these aliens, and all the kids on Lover's Lane shine their headlights on the aliens and save the world.
Wow. That sounds so familiar.
It does?
You mean like you've seen that movie or that happened to you?
Like did that just happen?
Wow.
Did you read about it in the news?
Yeah, look, it was something I read or watch so much news. I don't know, maybe it was a dream.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. There's something dreamlike about it. But yeah, this fellow Steve Terrell, he did a lot of usual television credits, such as Perry Mason and Dragnet and Navy Log and Wire Service and Schlitz Playhouse of Stars. Usual things.
I've actually heard of that one before. That's come up before.
Schlitz Playhouse of Stars?
It has. Yeah, wow.
Big star. Hey, wait a minute, Mutt Taylor. And Mutt Taylor alone. He was also on a show called Climax!
Oh, yeah. Climax, CBS Action Theater. Yeah.
Yep. That was an anthology series. And it was, this is where Casino Royale of James Bond fame premiered.
It's the first ever on-screen James Bond, played by an American named Barry Nelson, that you might remember as the boss of the hotel from The Shining. And they call him Jimmy Bond in that.
Now, this is
Mutt Taylor talking. It's not anyone else, too, because right.
Wow. Well, anyways, old Steve Terrell was on an episode of Climax, and he went on to found the Lambs Theater. And here's a description of the Lambs Theater. It says, young performers, many of them part of the Jesus movement of the early 70s.
Oh, no.
were drawn to this exciting exploration of faith and art. The company built a reputation for high-quality, fast-paced humor, physical dexterity, with a spiritual mission touring nationwide to college campuses, prisons, and Renaissance fairs.
Oh. Ooh.
That's what it says on their own website.
That sure sounds on the up and up to me. Nothing sinister going on there.
Amy, was you involved in any sort of a formal Jesus movement?
Well, I kept auditioning, and I tried to get in. They said, well, you could be behind the scenes or maybe do like play a dead body or the back end of a horse or, that kind of thing. But, I just decided it wasn't, I'm better at sales.
Yeah. Boy, that's tough. You have an audition for a theater company and they say, hey, you could play either a dead body or the back end of a horse. And that's it. That basically is all. That's all they thought you was fit for.
Well, I just didn't have a lot of experience.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I said, but I have faith that I can do it. I can have a speaking role. And then that's where I really started my No Line School of Acting for Women.
Oh, there you go.
So that you can be a part of the magic, even if that means you're mostly just doing accounting at Disney.
Exactly. So that there, the rejection of the Lambs Theater planted the seed in your mind of this No Line School of Acting. And this episode of Bonanza is like the perfect example of it that ever was. Yep. Hey, Maribel, you ever do any performing of any kind?
Well, no, but I have been told that I have it.
Oh, it.
Wow, there's a, yeah. It.
Yeah.
You've yes, my, my doctor. My doctor actually diagnosed me with it.
Well, hang on now.
You do have something about you. I'll say it.
Well, that's what they say. But, I like to stay modest.
Well, I'm just a little concerned. I wonder if you want to talk to another doctor who's got more details for you. Because
yeah. Because it could be that you have like what Cousin It has.
Oh, no, you don't want that.
It's just all hair.
Maribel, may you're with this. Maribel, you're everything that I aspire to be.
Now, Amy, I do think you would really benefit from taking one of my audio courses.
I know I would. How much does it cost?
Well, we can arrange a deal. I'll put you on some sort of layaway plan.
I don't have any credit.
Well, how about we do a trade for some of those corn dolls?
Oh, a trade! Oh, I love it. Yes, I can trade. I bet I could, if I made you like 100 corn dolls, would that be worth one download of your MP3s?
That sounds fair to me.
Oh, man, you was already up to your eyebrows and corn dolls.
Yeah, how long does it take to make 100 corn dolls?
Well, I guess I'll find out.
No way to know until you try. Weeks. It's about six weeks. Okay. About 6 weeks, and then allow 4 to 6 weeks for delivery, I reckon.
Oh, are you taking them by foot? They'll be delivered to my doorstep, I hope, in time for Christmas.
Well, it depends on where do you live, Maribel May?
I live in Whittier, California.
Oh, Whittier. I live far from there. You know what? I'll have to talk to my husband.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
I may have created a debt I cannot repay.
I think everything's going to work out just fine, really. I think it's going to be fine. Maribel, you're going to get your corn cob dolls, I believe. And maybe Sleverson's going to listen to that audio series. I think everything's going to work out just fine for you ladies.
Like I said, I got a whole collection of corn dolls myself. No comment. But I'd be happy to pitch in some of those, Amy, if you're coming up short of your quota.
Thank you so much. And I would give to you, which I already have on the docket, as long as you provide shipping, a home husband birth kit. It's a home husband birth kit, $79. It comes with Indian food, actual Indian food, can, and then a popcorn bowl size of water, and then labor tugging sticks in oak, mesquite, and mahogany, dry rot baby powder, and DW-40, a half-inch Phillips, and barbecue tongs with a bottle of Amstel Light for disinfecting.
Wow. That Phillips screwdriver especially probably coming real handy for birthing a baby. That is really
I tell you what, I haven't ever had a baby, but my husband, we've just done, you know, some home, you know, things at home just to see how it would work.
Yeah.
And, you know, when
he really
got up and in there and, you know, he could have gotten something out. I know he could have.
Wow. This makes me want to go have a baby, like go get a lady knocked up and have a baby. Now, I've never had a maternal instinct or paternal instinct before, but now having the tools, knowing that I have the wherewithal, I'm going to do it.
Men should do everything. Men should get in to every part of women's lives, you know, that they do the best job. Like, I don't know my own body. You know, take a wrench and just, you know, see what you can do, because I don't know what's going on down there and I don't want to look.
Yeah,
no, you're not kidding.
We learned from this episode is that the women have like an animal instinct to know what to do, but it only goes so far. And after that, the men need to take over.
That's right. Now, Haas in this episode's basically just a licensed OBGYN. He knows everything there is to know.
Just about, but specifically for Shoshones. But all right, well, we're getting too far into it. Well, we're going to take a little break, and then we are going to dig right into this episode, which is season 1, episode 15 of Bonanza, The Last Hunt. And man, you're going to love it. Don't go nowhere.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot.
we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All right, we're back. We are here with Mutt Taylor and Amy Sleverson, and Maribel May is our guest to discuss episode 15 of the first season of Bonanza. It's called The Last Hunt. Man, oh man, this is a fantastic episode. There is nowhere near as much bare-fisted brawling as I prefer to see in one of these episodes, but we do got some gunfire and plenty of Native Indigenous Indian American peoples. Oh, and Hop Sing holding a baby. Man, oh man. Hop Sing is funny in this episode. Okay, here we go. You guys ready to go scene by scene?
Hell yeah.
Yes. You jump in anything you want to say, but I'll start by telling you it's wintertime now. Here it is. It's wintertime on the Ponderosa or wherever we are. I'm not sure. Hoss and Joe two of our heroes. They're tracking a bighorn sheep. They're tracking a ram. And it seems like this is a multi-day ram hunting journey that these two men is on. And in the first scene, we get some comical music. Now, ever since Meryl Marco talked about music, I'm paying attention to it. Now, it helps me to know that something funny is going to happen when you start hearing that comical music. And sure enough, Joe tries to shoot this ram, but Hoss knocks him over. And we're laughing and laughing. And then we see an Indian person with a knife. And that's how this episode grabs you. You are grabbed hold of tight. Right at that point, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's a hell of a hook. And man, that kind of vitriol between the Joe and Hoss when he thought he bumped him, that was like, I thought he was going to kill him.
Yeah, Joe took that real serious. Hoss was laughing, but Joe really was mad. That's just about the maddest we've ever seen little Joe.
Yeah.
You can download that men doing dumb thing music off of Spotify and just play it while your husband does things around the house.
Oh man, that's a good idea. If I know that something comical is about to happen in my house, I'd put on that music from Bonanza and we'd all have a real good time. That's a good idea. Well, and then so after that knife appearance, we cut to the opening credits, and this, I believe, unless I am mistaken, this, I believe, is the 15th episode to feature the burning map in the opening credits of Bonanza. I'm going to double check that. But then we go to a scene here where our fellas are sleeping. It's old Joe and Hoss are sleeping out there, camping out. And this engine comes up with a knife, and she tries to steal something from little Joe. And little Joe, without even ever opening his eyes, manages to overpower and disarm this knife-wielding engine. And at that point, something strange happens, which I didn't understand. I watched it again and again. Hoss jumps up to come to Joe's aid, and... Oh, somebody's phone is ringing.
That's a pretty tune.
It is a pretty tune. Well, maybe we'll wait. I believe Amy Sleverson got a phone call there. We'll wait till she's got... It's all right. What happened here? Somebody call you, Amy?
Somebody called me, and I said, I didn't say anything. I just hung up on him.
Okay, all right.
I don't know anybody, so if anybody calls me, I know it's a wrong number.
That simplifies your life, right, if you don't know anybody. Well, so as I was saying, suddenly all these bullets start firing out of the campfire. I guess what happened was that Hoss, in his haste, kicked a whole bunch of things into the fire, but I just didn't see it happen.
Yeah, I wasn't clear.
That's right, because things just kept exploding.
Yeah, it just sounds like a wild shootout.
There were a couple inexplicable things in this opening scene, too, because like Hoss knows right away, I don't mean to spoil it, that she's pregnant, but yep. He never lifted the blanket to check. And then later when we see the blanket lifted, she ain't really got a pregnant belly.
Well, that is true. I think I have that scene to show us here. Okay, here, let's take a look. Well, so right before this, it is revealed that what they're dealing with is a woman person. They've got a woman, which is surprising enough. And then we have this other extraordinary reveal, which I took special notice of because I thought we was about to learn that she was dead, which would have been not the fastest that a woman has died on this show, but one of the fastest woman deaths we've ever. Actually, it might have been the fastest. Now I'm trying. You see, I'm struggling to share my screen. I never figure out how to do this easily. Here we go. Here's this big reveal moment. Let's watch. Okay, she's a woman. Old Joe says, come on over here.
Look at this.
Yep.
And that's why you never leave the house without makeup.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she has beautiful eye makeup on.
She sure did. And skin makeup to make her look like a Native American.
Yeah. Joe's gonna make her coffee.
She didn't get hit by one of them stray bullets, did she?
Now.
Oh, she ain't been hit.
Joe is blocking her.
Yeah, well, this coffee will fix her up.
Never mind.
Never mind.
What do you mean, never mind? What's wrong with her?
She's dead.
Well, Joe, this squaw's gonna have a baby.
Oh. And soon. No caffeine, ladies, while you're have a baby in you.
I guess that is what he's saying. Don't give her coffee. She's pregnant. So, like I'm saying, I was for sure that when Haas said, never mind, you know, forget about the coffee, he was going to say, she's dead. But instead, he said, she's pregnant. This squaw is going to have a baby. And as Butt says, we don't know what leads Haas to that conclusion. Because he just really is looking at her face, as far as I could tell. And I suppose that in 1959, there was no way to make a person who wasn't pregnant look pregnant, because they never did bother with it on this show, did they?
No, Maribel, is there something, you're a mother, is there something happens to your eyes when you get pregnant that you could tell or something?
Yeah, in fact, the whole face shifts an eighth of an inch to the left.
Really?
And so that is a telltale sign that a woman is with child.
Oh, isn't that something? The face shifts on the skull.
Yes, the entire face, the eyes, the nose, the mouth, it all shifts slightly to the left.
Okay.
And then it actually continues throughout the pregnancy. It continues to shift completely until it's back where it started from.
Like a clock.
That's exactly right.
And this is why they...
You have two kids. What kind are they?
Well, one is a girl. That's Judy. And one is a boy. And that's Buzz.
Oh, we had always hoped to have three girls and just call them all Carl.
Well, wouldn't that be something?
But it didn't happen because I'm barren.
Oh, boy.
Oh, no, that can't be true.
No, it is medically.
Well, we'll see. I'll give you some bedroom tips that might spice things up.
Oh, we've done a lot of things up there.
Well, have you tried fun costumes? Because the first thing I thought when I saw that young Indian gal was, what a costume. Oh, boy, my husband Freck would love to see me in that.
Well, I was so inspired by, you know, because it seems like they do so much research on this show be specific to the indigenous First Nations of this country. And they always use the same in Native American costumes, no matter what the tribe is.
Yeah, yeah.
Shoshone people never wear anything like that. But I understand that was an oversight.
Yeah. No, I think whatever your source is that tells you that's not what a Shoshone looks like, it just simply has to be wrong. I'd say Bonanza got it right every day.
Well, I check the internet, Dalton.
Oh, the internet. Well, sometimes the entire internet is wrong about everything. So, well, who knows? But I trust Bonanza. Now,
I'm sorry. I just have a quick question.
Yeah, yeah.
If I just see a woman and we're talking with a sideways face, she's either a quarter pregnant or three quarters pregnant.
So her, oh, I see.
If it's to the left, it's a quarter.
And if it's to the right, she's almost there. She's three quarters pregnant.
Well, it depends what angle you're looking at her at.
See that?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Well, I've never heard that before, but it is basically the only explanation for how Haas could have known that this woman was pregnant. So I suppose it's true. Now, also, next up, if I move on to the next scene, we had, I believe, one of the longest scenes in the history of television. This is a scene. Haas and the Squaw it starts out with the two of them, and then they talk about, Joe and Haas talk about how she must have been trying to go to Virginia City for some reason. They don't understand why. We understand that her fever is down. She seems to be both sick and having a baby, or sick from having a baby. It's, you know what I mean? Like the confluence of her being very sick and having a baby seems to be unexplored a little bit there. But and now we get into the realization these guys, she's going to give birth any minute now. And Haas says she's going to be needing a woman to help with the birthing. And he puts together a meal of wild roots and mesquite beans. And there's a lot of talk about that meal, which looks like coleslaw. And then what happens there? There's that's long. They get real nervous around this woman who has such lovely eye makeup, and Haas strokes her hair as she drinks, and then he sort of side coaches her through eating, and explains to her this is good Indian food. After they've all talked for so long about how hideously terrible this food is,
How does he know it's Indian food?
Yep.
Did he order it?
Yeah, maybe he had it delivered. No, he couldn't have. They're way up on a mountain. I don't know. I don't know. Couldn't have had it delivered. But, he persuades her to eat for the baby. And what else happens here? He says any female carrying a young just naturally knows what's expected, he says. But then the other thing is that Haas is 100% sure if they try to take her down this mountain, she will die. And Joe says, well, how do you know? And he says, I know that much about females.
It's true. You cannot take a woman down a mountain. They will die. Because look what happens in the end of this film. She comes down and dies.
That is a good damn point. That is a fair point. She was perfectly alive the entire time she was up on top of that hill.
Yep.
I really don't get what the big hoot is about. Both of my children were snowbirds.
Snowbirds? Wow, really? You had them outdoors in the snow?
Mm-hmm, exactly. It's a very natural way.
So how did Buzz become a wild child? He just scampered off into the wilderness from his birth and would
ran off on all fours.
Wow.
Man. Well, good for him. And then we have a weird scene there where Joe is trying to gather up more mesquite beans, and he sees his sheep again that he'd like to shoot, and he says the words doggone 17 times in this scene. And then there's a little bit of a, you know how, remember when Abbott and Costello always had this problem where the fat one would see something, and then by the time the skinny one got there, it was gone, and the skinny one didn't believe he ever saw it.
Yeah.
They had a little one of them there with their bighorn sheep. And then... But this is a weird scene where Haas is about to shoot the sheep and Joe's about to shoot him and he hears Haas's voice in his head saying, don't waste our ammunition, but he decides to do it anyway. And then the real Haas appears and says just exactly what he said in his fantasy. It was real strange. It was like psychedelic. Yeah. Then we get to back at camp. A lean-to has been made, and it is very unclear who made it because... In no time at all, this very nice lean-to has been made to shelter the pregnant Shoshone girl. And Joe says, hey, you should get her to make me one of those. And Haas says, well, you just let me know when you're pregnant, and I will. And okay.
Hilarious joke.
They're having a lot of fun. Boy, oh boy, these two are just, they couldn't be more nervous about having to give birth up there with this lady. And they seem to be like kind of in love with her too, because she's beautiful. They're just bumbling around, the two of them. It's unbelievable.
Well, you know what? I looked at the description of the next episode, and let me read it to you because this pertains. Nope. It's called El Toro Grande. Mm-hmm. Ben sends Haas and Joe to Monterey to purchase an expensive seed bowl, the first of the Blocker and Landon's many comic misadventures. Now, get this. Although the casual use of violence, as in the rapier fight, is oddly uncharacteristic for the series, Haas reveals his real name to be Eric for the first time.
Wow.
That's quite an episode coming up.
Holy macaroni. So in the next episode is the first time we ever find out that Haas's real name is Eric?
And apparently we're going to have some Joe and Haas adventures along the way, just the two of them?
I guess they figured it after this episode that these two are like a classic comedy team.
Unless instead of scavenging old single-use pilots, they took an actual series of two cowboys on the range and just planted it into Bonanza.
That could be it. Well, now, this here is the scene that I believe Amy Sleeverson was talking about, or when you was talking about your husband home birthing kit.
It's our home husband birthing kit, $79.99.
$79.99. That is, I'll tell you what, that's a hell of a lot cheaper than going to the damn hospital to have your baby, I'll tell you.
Yes, right. And safer, because who better than your husband will know how to, knows your body?
Yeah. Well, this is when Haas starts throwing out directions. He says, you got to dig a pit for hot coals, and we're going to steam some sage in there, and we're going to need rabbit pelts to wrap the baby in, and a cottonwood tree with dry rot to make baby powder, and all this. He just knows by heart all of the traditional ways that a Shoshone squaw expects to give birth.
Does that make sense, Maribel? Does that all check out?
That sounds like a stay at the Four Seasons to me. I didn't have a sage pit when I was birthing my children.
Did you have cottonwood dry rot pulped to a fine powder for your baby?
Not that I know of, but of course I was passed out in the woods alone.
Oh, where was Freck? I didn't realize you were there by yourself. Yeah,
well, that was my one issue with this episode. In my day, men weren't let anywhere near their women. I mean, I didn't see my husband for my entire pregnancy.
Oh, wait, wow. Did he leave or did you go somewhere?
I was put out.
Put out to where exactly? If you don't mind me asking, I'm just curious.
Well, at first it started... I came home from my doctor's appointment and the door was locked. So it started with just a wander around the block. I thought maybe Freck had accidentally locked me out. But then I realized, no, this was, part of the tradition. So I just, as I said, I wandered into the woods and I had a snow birth.
And he doesn't let you keep a key to the house?
No. Where would I put it? I don't have pockets. I don't have room in my purse. That can't be trusted with a key.
The jagged edges on a key, you just tear up the lining of your purse, I guess, wouldn't
right.
it?
Right.
Of course. Until the scientists invent a round key. Somebody. I'll be knocking.
You're wonderful, Maribel.
Well, Amy, as I said, I see a lot of potential in you.
Thank you so much.
Oh, I think you could be well on your way this time next year to becoming the complete woman.
I would like to be made complete by someone.
Oh, that's beautiful. I feel like this is the beginning of something beautiful for both of these ladies.
I guarantee it, or your husband's money back.
I always thought that this show on Bonanza would turn into a feminist triumph.
Yeah, well, clearly it's always had the makings of that, just by nature of the show we're talking about.
Did I miss the part where he has to ask her for all of her information before he's going to help her? Where Haas, that part of the scene where, because it reminded me of a practice that we do at church called Christian giving, where you're generous, but only if you have a background check on the person before they give you help. It's charity, but we you need to have an I-9 and a gas bill.
Oh,
that's just smart thinking.
That's just that smart.
Smart.
But you're that's right. That's for a sandwich, a peanut butter jelly sandwich that I just made.
Well, you don't want to do a favor for someone and find out they may not return the favor. You just end up getting hurt. You got to get vouching and credit. Yeah.
Yeah. They, as soon as I find out they don't have a identification, I grab that sandwich right back from them.
Yeah, an I-9 ain't worth nothing, too, unless you're there with your driver's license and your Social Security card or your passport, so you got to see all that stuff before you're going to hand over that sandwich.
Because otherwise, it might not go to someone who's deserving.
Right. Yeah, now you're referring to this moment where Hoss is talking about how they're going to take certain steps to prevent a woman and her baby from dying, and Joe says, why? She hadn't even told us her name.
Yeah, that you got to know. And then he asked her several times, you know, who are you? Tell us who you are.
Yeah.
Tell us why you're here. And she doesn't say anything because she doesn't have any lines.
That's right. Yeah, well, that's true. Right now, so we haven't mentioned that. She is, there's a lot of discussion as to whether she understands them or not. She appears to understand them, but she never opens her mouth to say a word this whole time. And her expression is sometimes coy and sometimes very neutral. There's a moment where they physically move her from lying down to sitting up, and she how would you explain it?
The only way I would explain it is her expression the entire episode is, I am not an expectant mother.
Right.
Or, I am a background actor, and I will not be getting an upgrade.
I know what you're saying, though. That scene where they sat her up, there was something, I don't know what her inner monologue was, but it felt like, oh, am I going for a drive?
It's like, yeah. She allows it to happen to her.
Yeah.
Well, you men don't do that where every once in a while when something traumatic is happening, you leave your body and watch from above like you're not inside yourself anymore.
No, if anything, I go further in my body.
Yeah.
Surely Amy's done this.
Oh, yes. I got titty twisters from Dave Hawkinson in kindergarten. And every time I think of it, I can't feel my face.
Your face is what you can't feel.
Yes. You know when your cheeks always are burning because you're so embarrassed all the time? And then suddenly all the blood runs from my head when I think of that time.
Oh, that's a beautiful memory. Well, folks, the next thing we see is I think, one of the funniest scenes I've ever seen in my whole life in any damn thing.
Is it because the music tells you so?
The music. Thank God the music told me, hey, man, get ready to laugh.
Have some
and
fun.
And boy, did I. I had to watch this again and again just so I could try and hear it because I was laughing so hard. We got Joe and Hoss, a bunch of ducks land in some water, which it's got to be, what would you think, like 10 degrees.
And for real, for the actors, because we was talking about that earlier.
Cold, mountain, snowy, just about frozen over. But there's some ducks have landed in it, and they decide they want to save their ammo, so they're not going to shoot a duck. But, man, they do want to eat one. And Hoss has a plan where they camouflage themselves as a log covered in leaves, and they get in the water up to their necks and hiding behind this log to get real close to those ducks. And man, oh man, if Hoss doesn't have to sneeze just as they're about to be right on top of these ducks. And what does he do? He puts his head underwater, or Joe forces his head underwater, and he sneezes underwater and all these bubbles come up. Man, oh man, did I laugh. Never seen anything that funny before. And then Joe succeeds in catching a real live duck. This is an actual live duck, which he grabs and pulls underwater and up again, and then, for some reason, puts its neck in his mouth.
Yeah, he holds it with his teeth like a hunting hound.
Yeah, that was an interesting choice. And we talked about this before, that sometimes there's real live animals just being handled by these actors in interesting ways. This was one of those times.
Yeah, usually birds, and they're usually being abused.
Yeah, I would say I'm surprised that there wasn't somebody on the set saying, please don't grab the duck by your teeth.
Oh, I'm not.
I've been grabbed by the teeth.
Oh, you've been grabbed by the teeth?
Yeah, my husband kind of does it. He'll grab me a little bit by my neck, you know, if I get too far ahead of him in the grocery.
Well, that's actually a real technique to subdue a woman. You just grab them by the nape of their neck, just like a little kitten.
Wow.
What's too far ahead of them? Is there...
It's like I start getting out of control and, you know, he's deep in the puddings and I'm already thinking about cakes.
I see.
So
there's not like a number of feet or anything like that. It's more like a, you know, when you feel it, like.
It's a real abandonment of ideas.
Okay.
You know, where I am not letting him experience what he needs to experience, and I'm already in the next food. I'm already in the next moment. You know?
It's item based. So he's gone. You've gone from cake from pudding, and he wants to stay in pudding and can't process.
He wants to stay in pudding, and I mean, I don't say this, but it's basically my body language is saying "fuck you."
Oh yeah, and he can pick right up on that.
At least that's what he says. I say with my body language.
Yep, time to bite you in the neck. Maribel, does Frecklin ever join you on your trips to the grocery store? Does he even know where it is?
Can you imagine? No, absolutely not. My husband doesn't even know what a grocery store is.
Really?
He thinks everything I serve is grown and made with love right in our home.
Excuse me, what is a grocery store?
See? Now, I'm so surprised you're single, Mutt. You seem like a real catch.
Well, I am, but I'm living in a shipping container up on the North Lakeshore, Tahoe, and there's not only any women around here, there's no one around here.
Yeah, that makes it hard to meet a potential spouse.
You got any single friends that would like to come up here, or I could come down for a while?
One comes to mind. Janice.
What? Janice, what's she like?
She's 4'8"
okay.
And a redhead.
Wow, so she's angry all the time.
She's a firecracker.
Wow, okay. I mean, that's a lot like my former girlfriend, Pris. She was a little taller, but she was still upset all the time. So I'd be interested anyway.
Oh, yeah, she was a handful.
I just wanted to ask, is she perhaps 12? She's so small.
That's a good question.
She might be. I'll have to run the numbers on that.
You might want to take a look at an I-9.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Only
some 12-year-olds aren't as available.
Right. That's true. Well, anyways, let's talk about the duck on a spit. They roast the duck on a spit in the next scene, and then they're going to set some rabbit snags. And then they do that, and I couldn't figure out. I think that was just a stuffed rabbit, right? They didn't kill a real
rabbit.
Yeah,
because it was stiff, though. I did get the feeling it was a stuffed real rabbit.
Yes, right. I think that may have been it.
What
so
was
the prop
Little
department
Joe
went and killed a rabbit and stuffed it?
Yeah, probably there on the range because they shot some of that for real outside.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Isn't that interesting? There's one scene in particular where Hoss and Joe walk toward each other in the out of doors. And by the time they get to each other, they're clearly on a soundstage.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah.
It's wild.
The scenic coordination, because I imagine they must have shot many episodes when they'd go out to Nevada. How they did it all, I don't know.
I can't imagine. Well,
that's kind of how intimacy works. Like at the first you mean it, and then as you gradually go closer and spend more time with somebody, you get more artificial.
Right. Oh, that is. You're right. That's a good metaphor for relationships. It's authentic in the beginning.
I treat my husband like he's a Hilton Honors guest.
Yeah.
Well, see? Isn't that nice? I think you're on the right track.
Oh, lovely. But folks, we need to talk about the Shoshone girl going into labor and the particular way in which she went into labor. Joe has made a bow and arrow, supposed to aid in the hunting up there. I don't know how long they think they're going to be there, but he took the time to make a bow and arrow. And He accidentally fires the arrow, and Hoss thinks they've come under attack by Injuns, which is something they're concerned about anyway, because here they are hanging out with this missing squaw.
Was that accidental? I thought that was on purpose.
Oh, did he do it on purpose?
I think he was being... This is the biggest asshole Joe's ever been in this episode.
Yeah. So he's fooling around. He fires an arrow near to Hoss just to kind of...
Just to fuck with him.
Just to fuck with him. Well, all right. I guess that did happen. So now... They start laughing. Joe is laughing and laughing about this prank that he pulled. I believe Hoss joins in on the laughter, right?
Yeah.
So now everybody's laughing, and then who begins to laugh? And as Joe says, the Sphinx has a sense of humor. It's our Shoshone squaw, and she is laughing and laughing, and then bang, the agony of labor. That is her reward for having a moment of joy there.
Yeah.
That's it. That makes that baby come.
That's what you get for preferring physical comedy.
Yeah, that's right. Why didn't she appreciate any of their witty repartee? Nope. She had to wait until they was bumbling around with a bow and arrow.
Maribel, does that happen when you had your kids? You just laugh to induce labor or watch a Three Stooges short?
Well, no, I've never laughed.
Oh, heavens. Wow.
It's just nothing's really ever gotten me.
Have you ever tickled yourself?
Oh, not exactly.
Do tell.
Interesting. But you've come close, it sounds like.
I've come close.
Okay. All right. Well, so this baby gets born. Joe at one point says, I don't know nothing about having babies, coming real close to a classic line from the Gone with the Wind.
I thought of that.
Yep. But out comes the baby, swaddled, as Shoshone tradition dictates, in rabbit pelts. And Hoss teaches Joe how to hold a baby. How does Hoss know? I don't know. The Shoshone girl.
Does he also know how to cut an umbilical cord and wipe the placental sac? But he did that, too.
He did that, too. Well,
wipe the placental sac?
Look, I told you, I don't know what a grocery store is.
Men know how to do everything in terms of obstetrics.
Yeah,
septics, did you say?
Obstetrics.
Oh, obstetrics, yeah. Well, and then finally the Shoshone girl speaks, and she asks if her baby girl is all right. And she speaks as Hoss says, you speak better English than I do. And then Hoss delivers the most beautiful compliment for a baby. He says, your baby, she's as pretty as a brand new penny. That beautiful. You imagine that? A child as pretty as a brand new penny? I can't even imagine.
She's as pretty as a metallicized, flattened Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, yeah. Or whoever it would have been in 1859.
Good point.
They would have had maybe it was a young Abe Lincoln. Right?
Yeah, he's that young one that's reading all the time by candlelight in a cabin.
That's who was on them pennies.
Anyway, beautiful nonetheless.
Yep, but then he says, she ain't a girl. She's a boy. And the woman seems upset. And he says, I thought all Shoshone women made big medicine to their gods, so they had nothing but baby boys. And then that creates a mystery of why she's upset it's a boy. And as a matter of fact, I don't believe we ever have a solution to that mystery.
No, but anyway, we sure don't.
No. We do learn in this scene that the baby has blue eyes, and as Hoss says, ain't no Indian baby ever had blue eyes. So his father must be a white man, and that gets us a major sting of music and a commercial break. That's a big deal. Now we understand this woman was trying to make her way to Virginia City all by herself, away from her tribe, and the baby's father must be a white man. Holy crap. Whole peck of trouble.
Yeah. But so many Indians on this show before have had blue eyes, so I don't understand what the problem is. Most of them.
Right. Mostly they have. Well, then we see a scene where there's no birds, no living things anywhere around, and Hoss knows that means that the storm is due, and they can't go down till tomorrow. This is the moment where Joe says, we don't even know her name, and Hoss has a good line. He says, this has been worrying you like a hound dog with a burr in his rump. But Joe says he's going to interrogate her. He's going to find out what's up. Right?
And then he does.
He does. He's found a war medicine bag, a Shoshone war medicine bag. And he he like confronts her with it. He pulls it out from behind her back just to see what her reaction is. Like he's a real investigator out there. But what he doesn't know is that a Shoshone woman is forbidden to even look at a war medicine bag. So now he's tricked her into looking at it. I don't know.
But then he acknowledges it's a faux pas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Are there things that women shouldn't look at in outside of Shoshone culture, Maribel?
The sun.
Well, you mean directly at the sun?
Yes, directly at the sun is a big no-no.
Right.
You should also never, ever stare directly into your husband's genitals.
Into them.
And when the orchestra, the indigenous orchestra, is playing trombones and French horn music and piccolos to announce themselves, you also look away.
That's absolutely right.
I'm learning more on this episode than I ever have.
No kidding.
I know how to go to a grocery store and wipe a placental sack.
I think Amy and I should have been consulted for this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds that way. Well, now, they decide they've got to go. Storm's coming. We got to get down this hill. Whatever the risks to mother and child. And they've got the squaw's on a horse, and at some point she falls off. And they decide to rest for a while. Now we see, finally, Ben Cartwright and Adam Cartwright. They haven't been in the episode at all, but they arrive with a couple of ranch hands, and they are worried and looking for Hoss and Joe. And now, now we got them all sitting there eating their hot coleslaw again, and there's dogs yelping, this is that weird little moment where they go to sleep and they wake up, and there's a knife in the war bag, the Shoshone girl is gone. She's been replaced by a bunch of leaves under her blanket. And Hoss, he just has so much. Up until now, Hoss has been dumb as a brick. But now, the amount of knowledge in Hoss's brain, he says, ain't no Indian war party would stuff this blanket full of weeds just to fool us. He knows almost, that would never happen.
It's like this episode wasn't written for these characters. I can't figure it out.
Almost like that.
Or he's showing the signs of late onset autism.
Oh, maybe that's right. He's got adult onset autism that suddenly allows him to have encyclopedic knowledge of certain. I think that you're onto something there. Well, now what happens? So they realize that the Shoshone girl has run away from them, and they go to try and find her. And who else is looking for her but a whole bunch of Indians? And now we got Ben and Adam and a whole bunch of Indians and Joe and Hoss. And the Shoshone girl all kind of meeting up in a big kind of problem. We got a problem. But the Indians are, I guess, easily scared off by the sound of gunfire, right? Isn't that what happens?
Yeah. Despite the fact that they're excellent trumpet players.
Is that right? Did they bring along a trumpet on their...
Well, every time they show up, it's a beautiful flourish from the horn section.
Oh, my. I didn't pick up on that this time. Well, okay. So now it turns out them Indians are gone. That threat is over. And Ben, they end up back at the ranch. Ben is real mad that his two sons got involved in all this baby business. He says, coming between a Shoshone woman and her people is just plain stupid. And then we have the second time in this episode that I laughed so hard I had to lie down for an hour. This was Hop Sing comes in. He says, next time you bring baby home, you bring laundry boy. Hop Sing got no time for washing diaper. Oh, man, that Hop Sing. Yes, every time he opens his mouth.
Is that when they tell Hop Sing to go to bed?
No, that was later. That's later when Ben puts Hop Sing to bed. He sends him to bed.
That's what I do to my husband. I say, go to bed. And he takes one of my antipsychotics and he is out. And then I can get some stuff done.
Yeah.
Sometimes get to the laundry, finally.
Send somebody to bed. Well, and then the men go up and they see the Shoshone girl, and she's the doctor is there, and that's when we first see this baby whose eyes are famously blue, and I didn't see any blue in those eyes.
No, and that's taken into account. Even people who end up with brown eyes often have blue eyes at birth, and they still couldn't find one of them.
Yeah, right. Good point. So, oops-a-daisy, Bonanza. But, and then we have a scene now where's, we understand the mother is unwell. I still don't know what she's unwell with and what that's all about. But
nobody does.
Nope. But then Hop Sing wakes up Ben Cartwright urgently. And Ben Cartwright goes up there. And I do have this clip, but I don't know if it's worth showing, but I'm going to, I guess.
I'm glad.
Show it. I want to see it.
Oh, okay. All right. See that? It worked. I made you big.
I was glad to see Hopsine wake up Ben Cartwright because I thought he was dead in that chair the way he was sleeping.
Yeah. His leg placement was really specific.
Yeah.
Now, are you seeing what I want you to be seeing?
Yeah.
Yes, okay. Sir.
Here we go. This is this scene where Ben Cartwright, he just wants to get some dirt. He wants to trade in gossip before something happens. Well, here we go. He's tending to the feverish new mother.
Do you hear me? I've sent for the doctor again. Before he gets here, I want you to tell me who your child's father is.
Before the doctor gets here, tell me. He's swabbing her down with a wet cloth.
I haven't been swabbed like that since 1954.
That was a good year.
He should be here with you. You tell me and I'll send for him.
You tell me who the father is and I'll send for him. He says, well, that sounds good. That sounds like it's all going to work out great. Except, what's that look on Ben Cartwright's face? Can it be?
He killed another one.
Yep. He sure did.
He killed another woman with his goddamn water swabbing.
He was dabbing her down with acid or cyanide.
I guess that could be it.
We learned that he's just constantly can't stop talking.
Yeah. Yep. And
he's needy.
I don't know. I don't think of Ben Cartwright as needy, but he just really wanted to get that dirt, I think, on who the father is. Of course. I mean, of course you want to know that anytime. It's a mystery. Who's the father? And tell me now before Doc gets here, because he wants to be the only one that knows. And so he can kind of walk around for a couple of days like, I know who the father is and whatnot, and tease everybody. I think, you know, trying to have some fun up there on the ranch. That's the best as I can figure. Anyway, next, right away, we have a scene where a fella shows up. Sumner Kyle has shown up with his boy Jason, who was in that movie about the aliens. And Jason he's a handsome. Isn't Jason a handsome young actor?
He sure is. Now he alludes to something where he just tried to bribe Ben Cartwright. Is that something from an episode we saw, or they just didn't clear that from this new script that wasn't for Bonanza?
Yeah. I wondered that too, and I looked, and we ain't never met this character before now.
Just checking.
But yeah, there is some very specific dialogue. Last time I was here, I tried to bribe you, and it didn't work. Well, now you've learned your lesson. Yeah, I think maybe that was something they forgot to cut from the script.
They have a script writing service. It's called cut and paste. Uh-huh. And you take other scripts. And then you just take what you like, and then it gets made.
Yeah. Okay. That would explain it. But now here's where we learn that Jason Sumner, son of a wealthy man, Jason Kyle, son of a wealthy man, is the father of this blue-eyed baby that's been born. And they got married, he insists, but his father says, well, in an Indian ceremony. That ain't real. And they love one another. Now, surely in this scene, we are going to learn the name of the Shoshone girl, right? From her loving husband.
Yeah. Oh,
well, no, he never utters it. That character will never get a name. But
what is she credited as?
Shoshone girl.
Well, maybe we should give her a name. How about Diane?
Oh, I love it.
That's a great one. And it's got Di in it, which is what she's already done.
Yeah, and it sounds very Native American.
Sure does. Very authentic.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
That's a great one.
Now, I'm going to play you a little clip from this scene because This young man, he is madly in love with this Shoshone girl, and he is so excited to be reunited with her and this baby and to be together. And Ben withholds for a long time the fact that she is dead, I guess because he wants to tell Jason in the most sensitive and careful way that he can, which then finally he does. So let's just take a look at this scene, which is really a scene about, you know, how sort of difficult it can be to give somebody bad news. Here we go.
Cartwright, I want you to send the girl and the child back to her people.
That's the rich man.
I'm ready to pay well for her silence.
Carl, you needn't worry too much about the girl. I doubt very much whether she would embarrass you.
Right. Because
she's never mentioned the name of the child's father.
Okay.
Do you mean you didn't know?
No. I didn't know. Obviously, she was too much in love with your son to want to cause him any trouble.
Now, he did say was.
Even though he did desert her.
Yeah. Did put her in the past tense.
Where is she?
Well, where is she? He's so excited.
Upstairs.
Upstairs.
Could still be alive as far as he knows. Yep. Uh-huh.
This is how I tell the kids.
Jason, she's dead.
There you go. No need to sugarcoat it. Bang. Jason, she's dead.
That's, I tell my husband, and you know, what I got him for Christmas, and yeah. I go, I didn't get you anything. And then he just runs down to the Christmas tree anyways.
And there's something down there for him, I reckon.
No!
Oh, no!
There's nothing!
You didn't get your husband
anything? Because we're really struggling right now.
Oh, well, yeah, I understand. You said you tripled your inventory of your Revelations pillows?
Yeah, because I believe in my business.
Yeah.
And I believe in myself. And, you know, and I'm, it's my business. And it, you know, it's all about success and just keep trying.
Yeah. What does it mean to triple the inventory? How many pillows do you have?
I have over 1,000 pillows at last count.
Oh, boy.
And there's specific biblical quotes that some people aren't comfortable in having in their family living space. Oh. But that's why I thought they might be fun or more interesting or non-copyrighted, and anyways, they aren't moving.
Okay, all right, but folks listening out there, if you want to bail Amy out and lessen her load somewhat, go ahead to Lot's Daughters and buy some of these Revelation pillows. They got quotes on there. You say they're people don't want in their living room.
Well, this seven-headed. It's a devil horse.
Okay.
And that's one of the signs that the apocalypse, and then it comes to eat the baby. Anyways, I'm just saying it, explaining that. I'm not quoting it directly,
right.
But it's kind of descriptions of things that sometimes people don't, I guess from what I've been customer feedback is they don't like the polyester lining, and they also don't like the violence of the imagery.
I see. Okay. So there's some very sort of explicit descriptions of what will happen at the end times. And, it's just a lot for a living room sofa.
I think it could match my motif perfectly, actually.
Oh yeah. How so? What's your motif over there?
Sort of a mixture of ditzy florals and burn in hell reds.
It is all those pillows are the red of you know, what's going to happen to most people.
Yeah.
I understand it's a really limited number who are getting into heaven who are going to fly.
Oh, really? That's your understanding? Yeah. Very limited.
Yeah.
Will?
Yes, right. Very limited number.
Yeah, nice. Well.
But more than the number of pillows that I have.
Yeah,
and right. This has been selling well. The home husband birth kit has been really flying off the shelf. So, you know, if you're looking for labor tugging sticks, these are sticks that you hold when your wife gives birth and you squeeze them really hard so that you don't punch her and tell her to stop screaming.
That's one of the things Hoss understood. You got to drive some wooden stakes into the ground. And I'd be ready for that. You know, I keep a stake of wood down my pant legs at all times in case I was to run into a vampire, which I'm not supposed to talk about on this podcast, and I didn't. But, so I'd be ready for that one part of birthing an Indian girl in the woods. I'd be ready for her. But anyway, so now she is dead. And Amy, you must have enjoyed this. We get it's her funeral, and Ben Cartwright reads a very long passage from the Bible. He goes, reads the Bible.
Finally, there's something I kind of knew the words to, and I could, pray along with the show.
Yeah, this is the first time we've had an actual reading from the Bible on the show, believe it or not.
When I've memorized all the lines from the show before and done them in kind of shadow play at home with, lamps at night, for my husband, it's been so hard to remember all the lines. So this was a real break for me to just do the prayer. It's like, I know that one.
Boy, you guys have a lot of fun over there. I tell you, that sounds great. I'd love to see one of those shows. Well, also at this funeral, all those Shoshone Braves ride up, and that's usually a cause for some alarm, but it's not going to make Ben Cartwright stop reading his Bible. He gets to the end of that passage, sure enough. And this is when we learn a very interesting ending for this episode, where it is understood that the chief over there is damn well going to want this baby, which is his grandson. So Jason Kyle is not going to end up with this baby. Forget it. Between the two, the chief has taken his grandson. Too bad. And that's when Jason, he's got a solution to the problem. He just leaves the white world and heads off with the Indians. He's going to stay with his little son there and live with the Shoshone. And this is not something he discusses with the Shoshone Indians at all. They have no idea this is coming. He just kind of walks over there and he says to Ben Cartwright, he says, "Tell my father I've gone home."
Oh, yeah, hence the title, The Last Hunt, which makes total sense.
That was quite a twist. I think I screamed at the top of my lungs.
You weren't seeing that coming, that Jason Kyle was going to just go native.
Not by a mile.
Yeah.
Well, it also seemed like the tribe was a little surprised.
It did seem that way.
Oh, you need a ride or somewhere?
And there was no dialogue exchange.
We just happened to be going the same direction, and then we're going to have an awkward split at a second where we got to take the baby and say goodbye. Nope. Coming the whole way home.
How's this going to work? Yeah.
Well, this
is another beautiful example of the No Line School of Acting, where, we do scene studies of entire groups of people who say nothing about what's going on in a scene. And it's a beautiful example of that.
Yeah, he didn't. None of them Shoshone said a single word about this fancy rich boy, blonde-haired fella joining up with their tribe from now on. They just kind of said, "Well, all right, here we go."
He's also getting into a carriage, right? Which feels like might be tough to take over some of them mountain switchback trails
for sure.
Like Cinderella going to the ball.
That is it. Well, that ends this episode, and now that brings our female love interest body count to 9 in 15 episodes. We have now lost 9 women. That includes Ben Cartwright's 3 wives, and Julia Boulette, and Hattie Johnson, and Sue Ellen Terry, and I forget the name of Hoss's love, but now that we add Shoshone Girl to that list.
Diane
the Shoshone Girl. Well, there you go. And now I'm sad to say we only have 416 episodes left of this show to discuss.
Oh, it's creeping up on us.
Oh, no.
It's terrible.
Oh, no.
I know. Yeah, and I was thinking, I don't know. Well, next week is the El Toro episode, you're saying?
El Toro Grande.
El Toro Grande.
Oh, well, is there going to be a car?
No, it's a bull. And we go down to Mexico.
Oh, Mexico.
Yeah. Oh, you're kidding. All right.
Oh, Mexico.
Well, that's exciting. I'm looking forward to that. Well, folks, any last things you want to plug or final observations about this episode? Anything anybody wants to get in before we wrap it up?
Well, I will say that in two episodes from now, Jack Lord is the guest star. So we're in for a real hot streak coming up.
Man, oh, man. That is hot.
All right. I just want to wish everybody happy holidays. And if you haven't done your Christmas shopping, or if you just had your couple dollars you could spare, please consider Lot's Daughters for all your gift-giving needs. We have candles and earrings and of course, the husbandry birthing kit and Revelations pills and everything. And
tragedy charms. Need. Got some tragedy charms.
Tragedy charms for anything that's gone wrong in your life that you know that everyone could remember, whether it's a drunk driving accident or if it's something that you didn't mean to do that caused someone else's demise or death. Like, oh no, left the pool gate open.
Oh boy. So you've got a tragedy charm that depicts an open pool gate?
Yes.
Do you have a tragedy charm of kindergarten titty twisters?
I don't know yet. I thought it was so specific, it might not be a big seller.
I see. Well, you'd know better than me. Those are tough judgment calls.
I've got my shipping container decorated for Christmas if anybody wants to come by and see it. It's really just string lights spelling out help on the roof because I am stranded and have not seen a human in I don't know how long. I'm using my Razer phone as a hotspot to do this internet recording right now, but I could use some help. I don't like to use this podcast as a plea for help, but I literally do need some help.
All right. Well, if you're up in the Lake Tahoe area, round about where they shot this episode in the Ponderosa, and you feel like helping Mutt Taylor, go on and do that. How's that?
Yeah, because I appreciate that. And this episode hit home, especially because I am subsiding completely on mesquite, beans, and wild root. So it does smell, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's good Indian food there.
Yeah.
Maribel, what you got going on?
I would encourage everyone, including Amy, to check out my latest audio series called The Complete Christmas, which is all about a 1960s housewife, moi, who loses her mind and decides she wants to cancel Christmas, but is then visited by her three magical appliances of Christmas, past, present, and future, and learns the true meaning of Christmas. So
where can people find that?
That is available anywhere you get your audio series. Spotify, Apple,
Stitcher. You just punch it in there. The Complete Christmas, it's called.
That's correct. Thank
you so
much.
And that's is that like an 8-episode audio journey through Christmas?
It's a 6-episode audio journey, exactly.
Okay, all right. Very good.
I love you. I love you, Mary Bell.
Thank you so much, Amy. And I will be expecting those corn husk dolls.
Yeah. Watch for those in the mail or by personal delivery by Amy Sleverson if her husband allows for that much of a journey.
Amy went quiet. I don't feel like you got confirmation that you're going to get those dolls, but I think that might be on purpose.
I don't know. She did go silent. All right,
and
folks.
We can't see her either.
No, that's true. All right, folks. Well, I'd say we've just about done her once again. That's an episode of Bonanas for Bonanza. And next time we'll talk about another one. Yep. All right. So long, folks. Bye.
Bonanas for Bonanza is brought to you by Andy Daly with Maria Bamford and Matt Gorley. Theme song by Matt Gorley with The Journeyman, which in this case are Mark McConville, Daniel Michikoff, and Wade Ryan. Special thanks to our gang on the ground, Josh Richmond and Shannon Locke. Bananas for Bonanza is produced by Ryan Connor and Matt Gorley, and executive produced by Colin Anderson and Chris Bennett. We'll see you next time.